Blog Talk Radio.
Paranexus Universe. It is Thursday, November 6, 2008. This is Doug Kelly, your host, along with my good friend and co-host, Grant Rubidunst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, welcome, everybody. It's nice to have you with us tonight.
Yes, it is. First Thursday in November. Boy, the year has gone by. Amazing.
Yeah.
Just so many things have happened this year. I mean, we had the conference here a couple of weeks ago. That went really well. We've got the videos. I just got the videos all processed today, and those will be available on the website. I've got to strip the audios and make those available as well, so look for those tomorrow or so on the website on paranexus.org. We invite our guests tonight to ask questions in the chat room. Give us a call. There is a link, a little button on your listening page there if you've got a headset and a computer, which you do because you're like listening to this program. Just click on that, put your name in there, and you can talk to us just right over the net. That'd be so cool. Or you can call in. The number is there on your screen, and I will post that in the chat room here in just a moment. We'd love to hear from you. Tonight we're going to be talking about the future of the paranormal field and just a number of things that we want to chat about. We did have a panel discussion on this issue at the conference, so we're going to talk about a few things that we talked about there and some other things, such as leadership in a group, just a few points from the CFPI course that's currently being conducted on ParanexusAcademy.org. So any news, Grant, in the paranormal, scientific, astronomical world that you're aware of? There's been some...
Well, it looks like Stevensville is starting to heat up again, Doug. There seems to be a lot of sightings, and I saw today on the Anomalous website where somebody reported, amazingly, after, you know, the Blossom Goodfellow thing, that somebody saw a gigantic UFO in Texas, you know? So I don't think this one had Yahweh on board or, you know, any of the enlightened ones, but nonetheless, it seems like Stevensville is really starting to heat up again. So, you know, we might have to have Bill Nell back with us because I know he's written a couple of really good articles for the journal. And so maybe he can give us an update in one of these weeks. Since we don't have a guest tonight, but, you know, we're going to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, the trends that we see with the paranormal community. But that's heated up quite a bit. And the other thing that I thought that was kind of interesting, I don't know if our audience has followed it very much, but, you know, NASA and its new contract for this Orion rocket, and there was a lot of controversy over the last couple of weeks because several of the engineers and scientists that have been working on this, rocket have been sounding out the alarm bells saying that it's not really a good design and that they fear that once the rocket, ignites it, I guess the design is it's a solid rocket similar to a single-stage solid rocket, kind of like, what's on the shuttle except on the sides. And they're very concerned that it would shift on the launch pad and have a tremendous amount of vibration. So NASA immediately came out and said, oh, we got everything under control. But, you know, it's not scheduled to lift off until, like, 2015. So hopefully they'll get that all taken care of. But, you know, it was an interesting article. You know, hopefully NASA will be very safety conscious after we've lost two shuttles here.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, let's get on to the topic at hand. Some of the things that we discussed at the Paranexus conference on the speaker panel was the future of the paranormal field. And in that, we were discussing such things as international standards. We talked about self-governing, which is an interesting topic, and the need to share and not compete. So let's address some of those to begin with. And let's just start out with the whole competition thing. Now, we've talked about that so many times here and there on the show. We've talked about it numerous times between ourselves. And the consensus was on the panel that we need to, number one, work together, not compete, and share data. Now, we're not really talking about identities and confidential matters. We're talking about data that we get from investigations and research, whether it's hauntings, UFO sightings, cryptozoological issues, all those types of things. And that's one of the reasons why we set up the Paranexus Registry of Anomalous Events at paranexus.net. And it's been set up now for, I don't know, a good 6 weeks or so. And, of course, it's not getting a lot of hits. It's not getting a lot of activity. We one of the things I need to do is buckle down and transfer some data. I'm just so busy with that conference that it took so much of my time. But I'm going to do that. So I encourage anyone who's listening to the live show or to the archive to go take a look at paranexus.net. It's a registry. We made it so that you can search across fields. So if you wanted to know whether there are any kind of haunting type events happening on a UFO investigation, you can actually search for those things across fields. And that's the way we wanted it. So encourage people to share data to go there. Now, at the current time, in order to submit, there's two ways to submit data, I should say. One is you can fill out the online form. The second way is if you're an active Paranexus member, you can sign up to be what is known as an agent on the site, and you can submit your own information and fill that form out. And it is a bit detailed, but you can supply what you've got and leave the rest blank. So that's one issue. Share data and work together. I've said it 1,000 times, Grant. I'll probably say it 1,000 times. It is absolutely beyond me why so many of the groups out there in the paranormal field feel like they have to compete. I honestly don't comprehend that.
Well, especially since we have a common goal in mind. And, you know, I think the hallmark of anybody who engages in any kind of research or any endeavor that, you know, is looking to try to find and understand a phenomena all generally work together. I mean, there's always some level of competition. But, you know, everybody works best when we can share the data because even in academic settings, the data is shared so that it can be verified and replicated. And I think that that's one of the things that's really critical, like we talked about in the conference. One of the things that I would really like to see happen at some point in the future is if we get the Cypress board up and moving, is that people feel comfortable, various groups feel comfortable enough to submit their data, whether it's EVPs or photographs, or whatever, to the Cypress board so that, you know, we can look at it in a very non-partial manner and provide them with feedback that they can either accept or reject. I think that's a way we definitely need to go.
I agree. And in that same vein, people may not know what Cypress is. And we have mentioned it before. Basically, it's an international standards committee, and it's chaired by Dusty Smith. It's got yourself, myself, Yari, and Joey Ward on it. And we are very close to being complete with the suggested set of standards and protocols that groups can use to overlay on their own standards and protocols, and many groups probably have similar items in their standards and protocols anyway. But this is really just a standard, something to get everybody kind of on the same page. It deals with ethics, professionalism, and it really avoids issues that are of a preferential matter. Whether you wear team shirts, stuff like that is not part of it. But what is part of it is the ethics, the professionalism, and we hope to have that available on Paranexus.org in the not-too-distant future. We're just trying to compile some additional information for ufology and cryptozoology. The haunting part is done, so who knows? We may even release it in parts, but that's there. And connected to that is the self-governing type of system. Now, Grant, you and I have talked about that a lot, about self-governing. You know, there's a lot of fields that govern their own. And the basis for that will be the international standards, the Cyprus standards. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to develop a system, a model, in which groups can voluntarily subscribe to it. And they can, it will almost be similar to a Better Business Bureau type of a model, but adjusted so that groups can voluntarily subscribe to it and they can post a little thing on their website. And if we can get that to take off, I mean, think about the credibility that would add to a group. In my opinion, if a group voluntarily subscribes to this and they can show on their site that they have a certain rating, so to speak, that's going to do a lot. Because if a client complains, you know, we handle complaints, if some violation was had occurred, you know, the group that did the violation might get a mark.
One ghost instead of two.
Yeah, something like that. So
sure.
And so, you know, that's what we're trying to develop, and we want groups to subscribe to that. My concern is whether groups will. And that brings us back to a point that I brought out at the conference that I think is a lot of food for thought. You know, if you're a paranormal group listening to this, or a researcher, or part of a research group, and especially in the haunting-related field of research, you've got to ask yourself, what are you in it for? Are you out to find or even hunt ghosts, or are you out to find answers? That's the difference.
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, even if folks are of that inclination, Cyprus gives them the forum to also, you know, submit their evidence and let other people take a look at it. And you know, the other thing about the other thing that I really think that we would like to impress on the community about Cyprus is that Cyprus is no way going to slap hands. But by the same token, we do know that there are groups, and it may not necessarily be out of malice. It may be out of the fact that they just really don't understand the importance of acting in an ethical manner with our clients, and they may unknowingly do harm. And I think that's one of the things that I was really happy to hear a lot of our folks at Paranexus Conference talk about, that do no harm in any of our investigations. And if an incident were to come up, we could simply say that, well, you know what, that particular group doesn't adhere to the standards of Cyprus. And that's all we would need to say. Because maybe somebody in an area is looking for somebody, maybe they're experiencing something, whatever the phenomenon might be, and they're looking for a reputable group to come in and investigate. And if the group embraces our standards, then they know that, you know, they don't have to worry about them coming in and asking them to do something that's not ethical, like buy equipment or, you know, buy them 5 or 6 super pizzas, you know, just for coming out. But you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Or buy a keg of beer or something, which would be totally inappropriate.
Well, the beer would be okay, wouldn't it?
I suppose so. If, you know, like maybe after an investigation, but certainly not prior to or during.
And
you know,
just so our listeners know, the Cyprus stands Committee for International Paranormal Research and Investigation Standards, and it's an acronym, and that's what we're referring to. It's basically the international standards. So, what are you in it for? Are you out to hunt ghosts, or are you in it to find answers? Now, that's primarily relating to the haunting aspect of the paranormal field, but there are other parts of the field too. And you know, we Paranexus is not focused on one field in particular. Yes, there are a lot of groups out there, and that brings up the question that Sharon has in the chat room: do you think there are too many people getting into this? And, you know, I don't know that there are too many people getting into this. I personally think there are too many people getting into it, not realizing the need for training. And I'm not talking about how to use an EMF meter. That's simple. I'm not talking about how to turn on a digital recorder and ask questions. I'm talking about training that goes way beyond that into the foundation of why people are doing it. I believe that so many of them are doing it because, well, you know, they want a thrill. I mean, we live in a thrill-seeking society. They want a thrill, and it could be thrilling to see an apparition, but yet how often does that happen? But, you know, watching TV, you'd think it happened every other week.
Yeah, that's true. And there's no doubt about it. And, you know, the thing of it is that there was an article, I don't know if many folks in the audience happened to catch it on CNN about maybe 2 weeks ago, where they talked about the growth of paranormal groups and how it was basically spurred on by TAPS. And I have the highest respect for TAPS and their approach, mm-hmm. and I think they've done many good things for the paranormal community. But the only thing that I would have a concern about personally is that a lot of these groups now, when you start talking to them at conferences or in our contact with them, are like hanging their hats on the fact that they're going to get a TV show. And they talked about it in the article on CNN about how all these groups now, that's like the holy grail for people in paranormal research is to have their own TV show. Mm-hmm. And we kind of touched on this in Cyprus, that one of the concerns we have about that is that the media is going to latch on to, you know what I mean, they latched on to Pet Rocks, and they latched on to Cabbage Patch Dolls for a brief period of time, and then they backed off because it was a hot new item. And I think that if they think that they can get, you know, sell a product, you know, by breaking into a commercial just before the MIS appears, mm-hmm. that's what's going to happen a lot of times with these groups. And I don't think that they're misguided. I just think that they think that that's the way to go.
And I agree. And one of the things that these new groups really need to understand is that the stuff you see on TV and the stuff that's in the real world are two very different things. A paranormal group with a TV show, they're not in it to research, to investigate. That's beside the point. The point is entertainment. That's the whole point of TV. And if you don't entertain your audience, you're going to lose the show. That's just the way it works. That's Hollywood for you. And so there is a difference in those two things. Now, Diane makes the comment, I think too many people go into researching areas of high strain is very unaware of what is involved, in other words, ethics and code of conduct, and I agree. And that's one of the purposes, the missions behind Paranexus, is to educate, to help people to grow, to learn, and that's why the CPI course, the Paranexus CPI course, goes into a person's self-concept, how you view yourself, why it's important to have a healthy self-concept before you go out doing research for a variety of reasons. How many people have we heard of that basically do the dude run thing or are afraid of the dark or are afraid of these things? I mean, what's there to be afraid of? Once you get doing it, you realize there's not a whole lot to be afraid of, especially in the area of hauntings. What can they do to you?
Yeah, the other side of that coin, Doug, is the fact that there's some other groups that go out there and they see an MIS or a demon and everything that comes up. And to me, that personally, my view of that is that's reckless. It's absolutely mm-hmm. reckless because if you – and we've talked about this on previous shows about how we've gone in and done investigations after groups have literally terrified some of our clients – telling yes. them that, you know, that they had an evil spirit in the house, to me, that is not being a responsible research group.
It's doing harm.
It is, and you know, it's you know, look, I know that you and I have been, we've been on probably well over I don't know, 20 investigations, you know, where people have claimed to have had that phenomenon going on, and we've never found anything like that.
Mm-mm. It's just not there, you know. And another, let's see, I hear another point that's made in the chat room by Sharon. There was a new website started on the paranormal at orb.com, and it went crazy with hundreds of people on it. And you know, Sharon, you touch on something that honestly has been I'm not even sure how to even put it. It's been an uphill battle for Paranexus, because at Paranexus we are not attracting the type of researchers who believe that orbs are spirits. And you know, the orb thing is pretty much like religion. If you believe in orbs, it requires faith, and then there are many, 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 many groups out there with orbs all over their websites, and they're orb believers. It's like a religion. You either believe in it or you don't. We simply say, hey, we want to believe. Show us why there are spirits. So far, nobody has been able to do that, and we have shown that the evidence, the preponderance of evidence, shows that it's airborne particles. I mean, you can't get past that. So the reason I think why Paranexus is growing probably a little bit slower than normal is because we're really trying to attract the very serious researchers, the professionals, the ones who really are passionate about this, not the ones who are ghost hunters, not the ones who are just want to go see a UFO or an alien. We want serious researchers. And you take the whole paranormal community, and unfortunately, in my humble opinion, I don't think that the majority of the field, and especially in the hauntings part of it, are as serious as they could be, because they just don't have the same thing.
And I think a lot of times they're looking for the excitement. And, you know, the fact of the matter is, whether you're doing paranormal research or research into parapsychology or whatever you're doing research in, the sad fact is that many times research is not very exciting. It can be, you know, not very boring. It just, you have to get a lot of data to support whatever your hypothesis is, whether it's a ghost, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, alien abductions, whatever. And, you know, in order to get to the point where it might be very exciting, you may have to do a lot of things that are very redundant, very, lack of better words, boring at times.
Mm-hmm. And mundane, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and Diane makes another comment, many don't understand the human factors of physiological effect of giving out the wrong information by the uninformed. And she hits on another aspect of it. There are groups out there who are sincere, many of them are, and yet they can give out the wrong information. They can unwittingly do harm simply because they don't see the need for education. And that's one of the things that I have been fighting since I came out with the CPI course a year ago. I mean, you know, Grant, that I've been called all kinds of stuff for having the audacity to write a training course for paranormal research. And I looked at that and I said, holy mackerel, there's too much to know. And there's a lot of professional and ethical issues that need to be addressed that many groups don't automatically know. And so that's one of the things, you know, walking up the mountain, you know, going up the hill, trying to show people, look, folks, set aside the old school crap. And that's my biggest contention with the field. We have been doing the same thing over and over and over again, and we're getting the same results. And we all know that's the definition of insanity. We've got to think differently, think fresh. We have to evolve this field. We can't remain stuck in the past. We've been doing it for decades, and we really haven't made a whole lot of strides in the positive direction. It takes fresh thinking, it takes original thinking, and it takes people who are ready to buck the flow a little bit to to get some stuff done. I mean, look at the other fields, hypnosis, Reiki, homeopathy. You can get certified in all of those, and you should. I mean, if that's your field of interest. But the same is true with this. Too many groups are unwittingly doing harm. They don't necessarily mean to. And that kind of goes back to your statement of being reckless or irresponsible.
Yeah, and you know, by no means are we generalizing, saying that everybody's like that. I think that any time that you get involved in this endeavor, that you have to go through a evolution. And we've experienced that, you know, with a lot of folks in the group. And you know, we've evolved to the point now where we have a set pattern of the way we conduct things. But you know what? There were a couple comments in the chat room. And you know, one thing we want to make you very clear, folks, is that we're not saying that what you experienced, you know, that you didn't live in a haunted house or you didn't have an experience that was, you know, very meaningful to you. But one of the things that I think that some folks lose sight of is that they look at it from only one perspective. And I think if you're really going to do the research, you really, and we've talked about this many times on the show, you have to take into all the factors that might be contributing to this. And, you know, back when we had Dr. Roll on the show in, what was it, February, Doug, who's the noted parapsychologist, Dr. Roll said some things that, you know, I know that for me it was a personal epiphany of sorts, in the sense that what if the actual things that people experience in a haunting that they attribute to spirits and ghosts or whatever is actually something that's intrinsically human, that may be a PK event, and that we really don't have a better way of labeling it? Because if you look at it historically, if humans have that ability and we just don't know how to harness it, what a better way to label something unknown and puzzling to us as supernatural.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So, you know, that's one thing, and I think that's a good point that you made. We're not saying that there are no hauntings, that there is no paranormal activity. There's plenty of evidence that there is. What we're saying is that most of the cases that we do that are allegedly paranormal are not paranormal. They are either involve psychology or natural occurrences or both. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to be clear about that too. We're not just putting it down. We're not like mainstream science who just doesn't believe in any of it. We understand that things can happen. So we've talked about working together, not competing. I will not compete with any group. They can say what they want. I won't give them any energy, especially if it's negative. But I'm not going to compete with them. I will work with them. We've talked about the international standards, policing our own. Some other things that I think would be extremely helpful to paranormal research groups of any kind, in other words, whether it's hauntings, ufology, cryptozoology, whatever, is the leadership, the management of that group. And that's one of the reasons why the CFPI course is out, and that's the Certified Founding Paranormal Investigator course. And what that is that it's really a full-blown leadership course in a paranormal wrapper. That's literally what it is. And the information in that course you can't get on the net, because I've been teaching leadership and management courses for years and years and years. I've taught tens of thousands of managers, CEOs, executives over the years, and this is the stuff that I've developed over the years from my own models, from a number of different things. And I wanted to touch tonight on a few points from that course. Now, the course is currently available on ParanexusAcademy.org, and it will be available here in the next couple, 3 weeks as a home study version. And it's also got audio clips to it as well, some audio instruction. But one of the things that I really want to point out, and Grant, I know that you're going to, we've talked about this, is the makeup of your group. Especially in the hauntings area of the paranormal, you got a lot of groups who have a lot of members, and they can go and flood a location with energy, especially with people. And they all bring that energy to the location. And if there are any psychics there, well, you know what psychics say, there's too much energy. It can't pick up on anything. It's like too much in the sea. So one of the things that we recommend is having type lighter grant. It's having minimal members. Minimal members with a position. In other words, don't just add anybody that applies. There's a lot of people that want to do it, and that's fine, but you've really got to sort through them no differently than a business has to choose the right employees. You've got to choose people who are serious about it, who have passion for it, but that's not enough either. You need to choose people who are also in a life position to do it. Now, I've gone through a number of people who were very excited, very enthusiastic, but just simply were not in a position in their life at the moment to do it. I had one fellow, great guy, very interested, very enthusiastic, and he had 5 kids and a full-time job and was going to college to boot. He just literally had no time to do it, and I think he bit off more than he can chew, which, you know, hey, we do at times when we're excited. And so make sure that the individual who's applying for membership is in a position to do it, and that they're dependable and reliable and ethical and honest and all those things that we typically look for. But the one thing that I recommend in the CFPI course is that you create positions on your team, and many of us do that. But fill those positions, and then anybody who else wants to come to the team, they go on a waiting list, because you only have so many positions, and you can only take so many people on an investigation. And we recommend, if you're going to a residence to do an investigation, keep it to 4 or so people, no more than that. I mean, we've had a lot of conversations, Grant, on that one.
Yeah, that was part of our kind of evolution. We initially went out on some investigations that weren't necessarily training investigations and brought quite a few people. And then, you know, we kind of came to the conclusion that the nature, it seems, of paranormal activity is that it can be very fleeting, or that if it is an intelligent haunting and there is something there, that the chances are that when you bring in a bunch of outsiders, it tends to retract or pull away from what's going on there. And so we gradually came to the conclusion that the least amount of team members that go out for a preliminary is probably more conducive to not causing whatever is going on there to do that pulling away. And we also ask our clients now to do some journaling. Because we fully understand, and I'm sure there's many other folks out there that would agree with us, that, you know, just by virtue of the fact that we're there, you know, the phenomena may go away and may return once we're gone. So if folks are willing to journal, you know, we're more than willing to take a look at it, and, you know, and that's a great way to document. And, you know, if nothing else, to show to us at a later date, you know, what exactly has been happening. It's not that we don't trust what they're telling us, but that helps us a great deal as researchers.
There has to be that investment on the part of the client as well. And they can invest in it by journaling. And so that's a good point. The other thing connected to not taking too many people is not allowing the client to have everybody there. And that's something that the case manager or the founder really has to set straight with the client. How many people will be in the home when we come? Well, I'd like to invite my two neighbors and my sister-in-law and my grandmother and whoever. No, I'm sorry. We can't do an investigation with all those people there. What we'd really prefer is to have, you know, the adults, the two adults, generally speaking. If there are small children that are really not essential to the investigation, can they go somewhere for the evening, something on that order, for the time that you're there? And I tell you what, folks, the Doug got spoiled, because there's a couple of things that I just won't do anymore. And here's why. When we go do an investigation, it costs money. Typically, the clients don't pay for that, and typically, they don't even donate anything. So it costs the group, the team, money to drive there, the time away, equipment. I mean, how many thousands of dollars do we all have invested in equipment? And so we go there on a serious investigation, and if we get there and they've got every Tom, Dick, and Harry from the neighborhood there, in my opinion, either the people leave or we leave. And I'm not gonna be mean about it. I'm not gonna be rude about it by any stretch. But I'm gonna say, you know, we just can't do an investigation with everyone here. I know they want to be here, but this is really not the time. We're here to find some answers and help you. Is there any way we can ask you to invite these other additional folks to come back another time? And if they say, well, they really want to be here, and say, well, I understand and I respect that. We're going to then reschedule, and I may not even reschedule it. We're going to go ahead and take our leave. Now, that leads also into another area that can happen at times, and that is when you rally the team, you get everybody scheduled to go on an investigation, and after you do that, sometimes even at the last minute, the client cancels or wants to reschedule. Now, there are certainly legitimate reasons for that. Somebody got hurt, somebody's ill, something like that. But if it is not a good reason, in my opinion, I won't be going back, because we've gotten everybody's schedules all connected and we're all going to be there. And if they don't respect that, I'm not going to go back. I have better things to do. Diane also made a comment in the chat room. We normally don't tell everyone what we are doing or where we are going for that reason. Too many chefs spoil the soup or muddy the information. That gets into another thing, doesn't it, Grant, on informing team members?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, by all means, our procedure, our protocol is that we don't tell anybody generally anything, and we encourage our group members not to do anything or to research it, because it tends to contaminate. And, you know, if people go in with a preconceived notion, like somebody, I can't recall who it was in the chat room a little while ago, talked about preconceived notions, then you're setting yourself up to get into a situation where if somebody has read that there's a certain type of activity going on there, they're more inclined to believe it, I think, or to experience it. So I think you really have to go in with a clean slate.
Yes, you do. So, some good stuff coming out of this. All right, so let's talk about inviting members, screening members, and some tips and so forth that group founders can use. All right. Again, let's go back to the analogy of hiring an employee for a company. Now, if any of the group founders are also managers secularly, or they have their business secularly, then they can really understand this. When you interview a member, here's the steps that I go through. The first step is them filling out the application and sending it to me. Now, if the application has a generous number of typos, grammatical errors, and so forth, it stops right there. Now, some people think, you're a tight ass, aren't you? You know, for that kind of a thing. I mean, what are you looking for? You know, authors, writers, or team members? What I'm looking for is people who care enough to do it right. At least use spell check. You know, they could do that. So if the application has got all kinds of misspellings and grammatical errors, I'm sorry, I'm not going any further with it, because I'm looking for the cream of the crop. I'm looking for professional members. Now, if the application looks good and all that, we go to the next step, which is a phone interview. And I discuss it with them. I tell them about our philosophy, our approach, make sure there's a good fit. And all the while, I am striving to answer three questions. Those three questions are: can they do the job? Will they do the job? And do they fit my team? Now, many people can do the job, many people will do the job, but not necessarily everybody will fit your team. There could be a difference of philosophy, a difference of approach, which is fine. I don't have an issue with that. But I want people who identify with the approach that we're taking, especially the seriousness, the professionalism, and all that, the passionate part of it. So can they do the job? Will they do the job? Do they fit my team? Now, those are the questions you're trying to get answered, not only in the phone interview. And if the phone interview goes well, then you can meet with them face-to-face if that's at all possible, and I would highly recommend that. If the green light is there all the way across and you do have a position open for them, then you invite them to join your team. But again, there's a probationary period of sorts where they will accompany you on a couple of investigations or even a period of time, and they have a chance to check you out. You have a chance to check them out. And then you really see if it's a truly good fit. So those are some ideas on inviting team members. But again, I will reiterate, don't just take everybody. Have a place for them. There's nothing that will kill the morale of your team quicker than having too many members who don't get to go on investigations. And so make sure that you've got just a small group who fulfill the necessary positions. You've got some noise on your end, don't you, Grant?
I haven't been hearing anything. I had a little buzz a few minutes ago, but nothing recently. But, you know, I think that's also really important, too, that it's almost as if the person that is wanting to come onto a team or who's applied to come onto the team almost has to be, for lack of a better word, on probation for a little while. Because I think when you talk about just basic group dynamics, either person is going to be on their very best behavior or they're not going to be on an investigation. And, I mean, the person who presents, we've had people that have applied for the team that have presented initially well, but then we go out on an investigation, and we find they're trying to take over the reins, or they're, you know, not following protocol or procedure, or a month down the road, they are undermining other people in the group or getting into disputes with other people in the group, or wanting to call some of the shots. And that's really not appropriate. And what that does is it creates a lot of dissension in the group. It causes folks not to focus on the research. And it's just generally disruptive. And so yes, we've had folks that have come in that we've given the benefit of the doubt or seem to appear to be really serious about it, and then come to find out that they've got their own agenda. And when somebody has their own agenda and it isn't the same as ours, it's just not conducive to having a really cohesive group that's going to do the very best as far as trying to, you know, get to the bottom of things and do good research.
Right. And there is a difference between a team and a group. A group
absolutely
are individuals who are working toward a goal, but a team is a team of people who work together, who are cross-trained. Ding, 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 ding. There's a point. Cross-train all your members. Everybody knows how to do everything. And that they work together for a common goal. Instead of just a bunch of individuals individually working for a common goal, you've got a team of people. And that's what you want. And, I'm with you. I got very tired after going through dozens of members. I got very, very tired of babysitting, and I refused to do that. I'm an adult. They're an adult. I don't need to hold hands. I don't need to call them and remind them at the last minute that we have an investigation tonight, and I refuse to do that. If they can't do that, if they can't be there on time, then, you know, we may have an issue. And so...
Well, they also have to respect the roles of members within the team. I think that's absolutely critical. There's nothing that says that if you join a team and your goal is to eventually become a case manager, there's nothing wrong with letting us know that. I think that's great. And, you know, I'm sure the case manager is going to take you under their wing once they know that as time goes on and you've proven yourself in an investigation or two, or maybe, you know, a half a dozen. But, you know, to come charging into a group and think you're going to go right to the top, I mean, the reality of that is you don't do that in the real world. And, you know, that's not going to happen in serious groups that are trying to conduct research. And a lot of times when folks come in with that kind of agenda and their agenda isn't met, and I think in their minds they need this instant gratification that they're going to go on one investigation and next thing you know they're going to be a case manager, you know, that's not a good fit. That's not a good fit. And the one thing that we don't need is folks that are going to be, you know, creating divisions as opposed to trying to create a real cohesive group unity.
Let's talk about the whole case manager thing, because that's a good point. I recommend that founders be the case manager unless they have a very trusted member who's been with them a long time, who's just really good, then fine. But founders should be the case manager, because I've had too many cases or too many times when something was dropped, a case was dropped, the case manager didn't get back to the person, and so I said no more. And, you know, Grant, between you and me, we did it for our group, and we still do it for our group. And so I really recommend the founder be, in most cases, be the case manager. Now, there's a question in chat from TV Talk. Would it be proper for one or two scouts from the team check out the situation, then determine whether to call out more team members? And the answer is absolutely yes. We call that a preliminary investigation. And that's when two team members, preferably the founder and a designated other person, go and check out the situation. Now let's talk about investigations and how and acceptable investigations. When you get an inquiry for an investigation, you need to make sure it's worthy of your time. Now, I'm not being mean with that. What I'm saying is that if you get an investigation inquiry through email or from an online form, read it carefully. Read it carefully. Then, of course, call the client, talk with them. Here's my approach. And this works so much. And honestly, it does cut down on the number of investigations we do. And some groups may not like that, but this is what I do. I call them up. I ask them what's going on. They tell me. I let them vent. I let them throw up all over me because that's what they want to do. They just want to talk to somebody who doesn't think they're crazy. So I let them talk. And once they've kind of gotten it out of their system, I ask them specific questions. We have a questionnaire. I ask them the tough questions about, is there any alcohol use, drug use, prescription drug use, that sort of a thing. I ask them pertinent questions about the events that they're talking about. And then I coach them. I coach them. I talk to them and teach them how to view spirits, because a lot of them are scared. Well, I there's this person watching me, and I've seen them out of the glimpse of my eye, and yada, yada. I said, well, what have they done to you? Well, nothing. That's the point. There really is nothing they can do other than startle you. And I understand about being startled. Heck, humans can do that to each other. And I say, you know, view spirits just like you view people. If they're there, there's usually a reason. They're trying to get your attention, typically. They want something. If you don't feel compelled to help them, say so. There's nothing I can do for you. I wish I could, but I can't help you. Please go find somebody that can help you. And that kind of conversation is what I share with them. And I'll tell you what, in 9 times out of 10, it's like a big light bulb goes on in their head. And they say, wow, I never realized that. And I talk to them, well, can it hurt me? I says, well, you know, no. I mean, the stuff you see on TV is stuff on TV. You don't hear about that kind of stuff among credible paranormal researchers. It's not like they're going to go and throw you up against the wall or throw you across the room or pick up some appliance and throw it at you. Now, has that happened? Well, I've heard that it's happened, but where's the proof? Where is it? It's not there. We'll say, well, can't they scratch you? Well, yeah, I suppose, but my cat scratches me, so what? Well, can't they push you? Yeah, but, you know, I can push somebody, so what? Well, can't they pull your ponytail? Yeah, but other people can do that. So what? It's like,
but you know, too,
you
Doug,
change your whole
the thing
paradigm.
Of it is, is if you get a case like that, and this kind of goes back to a question that TV asked in the chat room, is if you get a case like that and you go out and you have a small group that's doing the preliminary investigation and you start seeing things or start hearing things that indicate that there may be something actually going on there, then the investigation can really kind of unfold. We're not coming in and wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. People are bumping into each other with EMF meters and, you know, and doing vigils all over the place. Then you can have a real legitimate investigation that works over the course of time because you've got something there that you can initially hang your hat on. So many times, and I know this will resonate with you, Doug, and probably a lot of our members in the audience, where you'll have somebody will call you up, and they're terrified because they have a little child and children.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their kid is talking to somebody that's not there. Well, one of the things that maybe folks aren't aware of is if you have a little kid that's talking to themselves, and let's say they're under 5 years old, that's not at all unusual. Matter of fact, that's
right.
Actually the sign of pretty high intelligence. And it's not unusual for kids to have imaginary friends. But I think a lot of times what happens is the adult belief system kind of enmeshes itself with their fears about, you know, what the child may be encountering when there may be absolutely nothing there. Now, I think it's incumbent upon us as the investigators, and I'm sure folks in the audience will agree with me, is if that's going on, then it's our role to try to provide some comfort, to explain to them the fact that, you know, that this isn't all that unusual. Matter of fact, if you recall, Doug, we had somebody call us up one time that had a 4-year-old son, and they said to us that they were really concerned because they said that their son had a friend who had drowned in a pool. And, you know, we kind of kicked that around. And what's one of the first things? Those of you who've got a pool and live here in Florida, one of the first things you do with kids is you tell them, if you fall in that pool, you could drown, you know, so you got to stick
right.
around with mom and dad. And so that creates fear. Even a 4-year-old has some conception of the fact that, you know, like they could get hurt or something bad could happen to them. And so, you know, they attribute that to something that's happening to them, you know, from a spiritual
right.
standpoint or haunting, when in reality it's a perfectly normal reaction to a potentially dangerous situation.
Yes, and you know, that's a good point. You know, kids, I mean, so many of the cases we do involve young kids in the 4 to 5 and above range, you know, 4, 5, 6, right in there. You know, it's hard to know whether it's a fertile imagination or whether you have a paranormal event going on. So it really takes some digging. And I'm looking at some of the comments in the chat room, and I'm really proud of you guys because you're doing it the right way. You're digging for information. You're coaching the client. Now, just to finish up, my process is once I've done the phone call, what I do, and it usually gets them feeling much better, I have them journal. And I say, write down, document the different things that you are facing. When they happen, give me a brief synopsis of what's going on in the, you know, when it happens. I mean, what's the situation, what's happening, that sort of thing. And if it doesn't dissipate, call me back. Then we'll make a decision as to whether to go do an investigation, and even then we'll do a preliminary and before we actually go do a full-fledged, because you see, our investigations are not necessarily a one-night deal. They could be, but you know, we're in it for research. Now, I'm speaking from Paranexus Research Foundation point of view now. We've recently, just FYI, we've recently reorganized the spirit team, and we have the 3 spirit team chapters have become their own independent spirit team groups. So we're not organized the same way as we were. And the chapter that we had here in the Punta Gorda, Florida area is basically no more. And Grant and I are now doing our research as part of Paranexus Research Foundation. So there's some other comments in here that I think are pertinent. One of them that Diane brought up is about criminal history. And I have taken a lot of grief on my position on that from other groups, too. And my position is that if they have had even one DUI in the past 10 years, or if they've been convicted of a crime in the past 10 years, I'm sorry, they're just not eligible. Now, that's a case-by-case basis in terms of whether I want to keep it to 10 years, but I can't sanction taking somebody who's a convicted thief to a client's home because, number one, what if the client finds out? And number two, what if you don't know this person as well as you thought and they do steal something? We have an issue here. I don't even want to go there. I don't have time nor the patience to do that. So make sure that your members are truthful with you. And if they're not, that's really a boundary violation, which takes us into another aspect of member relationships. Because sometimes you can get relationship issues with members. And you as a founder, as a director of your group, have got to ask, do you really want to go there? We're all adults here, and I expect members to act like adults. You got a problem with somebody, talk it out, work it out. You know, this is not high school. Deal with it. Work it out. Show patience. Show kindness. And resolve those issues. Work together. Now, if you've got a member who won't do that, you know what? We're done here. You know, that's the deal with them.
Well, you know, the other thing is, too, Doug, is they have to be able to embrace the fact that other people have, on a team, you can still have different opinions. And that, you know, one of the things I've always been proudest about my association with when we were the Spirit Team and now that we're Paranexus is that we've always provided a forum for all of our members to discuss their impressions, their feelings about any particular investigation without fear of any recrimination or being ridiculed for what they have to say. By giving a person that forum where they can feel comfortable in saying whatever they or discussing their impressions, it doesn't necessarily mean that we support what they're saying, but it opens up the floor so that everybody can provide them with feedback. And, you know, I just think that that's the healthiest kind of environment for any kind of group because it really improves the communications for everybody, and it allows that other person to try to see it from the other team member's perspective, which is particularly important when we're interacting with our clients. Because we have to be able to put ourselves in our client's shoes, no matter how wild or wacky some of the things they're saying may strike us. And we, you know, our first reaction may be, oh my gosh, you know, this lady sounds like, you know, she stopped taking her, you know, her psychotropic medications. But by the same token, you know, we always remain open-minded and, you know, at least give the client the benefit of the doubt. Now, the one thing that I saw here in chat a little while ago, I can't recall which one of our, you know, audience members mentioned it. I think it might have been Sierra, was about an investigation or TV talk where they went out and they found that the person was actually abusing alcohol. Those sort of situations, you can easily be fooled. Easily be fooled by. We had an investigation one time where we asked the person, have you had any history of child abuse or have you ever had, here in Florida it's called Children's and Family Services, other places it may be Adult Protective Services, has anybody ever come in and investigated you? And of course the response from the client and the person who was actually kind of using them as like trying to manipulate that person was absolutely not. Nothing like that has ever happened here. And then the farther we got into our preliminary assessment, which was only three of us, it was Doug, myself, and I'm trying to recall who else was there. I think Lori. From our Tampa chapter, was as we got farther into it, all of a sudden, quite nonchalantly, they admitted to us, like, oh, my goodness, yeah, this person had an infant, and they dropped the infant, and golly, you know, there were detectives here and everything else. So, I mean, of course, the red flags went up all over the place when that happened, and later we found out that this particular individual was now pregnant again in her second trimester of her pregnancy and had a psychiatric history. And, of course, as everybody knows, you don't give pregnant women any kind of medication. So there was a real issue there. So much the same as what that individual talked about, whether it was TV talk or whether it was Diane or whoever.
I think it was
Parawomen
League.
Yeah, you got to be on guard, Parawomen League.
And she's talking about the whole thing of being fooled. And don't forget that as the founder of your group or even as a member, you always have the option to not do an investigation. If you get there and things are not as you thought they were to be, you always have the choice to say, you know, this is just no longer something I want to do, and we're going to very politely and respectfully decline and leave. And there's nothing wrong with that either. It's not like, well, we have to go in there and do it. It's, no, you don't have to. Remember, you are doing them a service, which is usually a free service, and if they're not going to hold up to their end of the bargain, we're done here. You
can't
just take
it. Well, it's an ethical thing to do, Doug.
Mm-hmm.
It's an absolute ethical thing to do. You know, like as a mental health counselor, if I have a client and he shows up for an appointment with me and he's intoxicated, whether it's on alcohol or drugs, I don't see him. I simply don't see him because, I mean, if you're impaired, that's not the time to be, you know, trying to work on whatever issues have brought you to come and see me. So it's really, really imperative that if you come across a situation where you really feel or it's obvious that that person is impaired, the ethical thing to do is say, you know, we would like to do the investigation, but you're obviously, you know, impaired here, and this is not the time to do it. So we either need to reschedule or we need to have you journal for a couple of weeks before we reconsider coming back out here. And you have to be sober.
Yes. Yeah, that would be – I mean, I just don't do that. I mean, that one case that you had mentioned where they had – DCF, Department of Children and Families, in there. You know, the house was such a filthy, disgusting, cluttered mess that I just about left. And there was only one reason why we didn't, and that was because Lori was picking up on something that we were able to handle. But if it hadn't have been for that, I would have said, you know what? You don't even respect yourself enough to live in cleanliness. You certainly don't respect us enough. And, you know, I just don't appreciate that. I just don't appreciate it. So a number of different things we discussed in this program. Sounds like, to me, like a lot of folks, if not everybody in the chat room is just chiming in with this. I'm so glad to hear that. I'm so glad to see that. Because that's what we need. Remember the credo, do no harm. Do no harm. Be careful of what you say. Be careful. Don't tell people they have a demon or an evil spirit in the house, because I'm sorry, it just isn't, if it even happens, it's so rare that it almost doesn't happen. So don't just say that, because unless you can do something about it, don't do that. Don't deal with that. Look for the psychology. As we've said many times, people need to get rid of the demons in their head before they deal with the demons in their house. And there's a question in the chat from Jen. Please clarify how much info the team should have prior to investigations. If they don't know what the claims are, how do they potentially find natural explanations for them? And that's a great question, Jen. And I think I know why you're asking that. The answer to that question is we don't give the team any prior information about the alleged events. We want the team to go in with absolutely no preconceived notions. And so if we're telling them, oh, yeah, they saw a spirit in this corner and then one over in that bedroom and then, you know, this stuff flew off the stove and yada, yada, that's going to predispose people whether they want it to or not. If, as the case manager, as the founder slash case manager or a couple of people know, fine, but the rest of the team need to go into it without any preconceived notions or pre-information. And incidentally, that's another reason why I suggest that groups do not do research on the location before the investigation. Now, if you are going to do some research, sometimes it does need to be done prior. Have your researcher do that research, but don't divulge a bunch of stuff to the team.
Yeah, by all means, you're going to contaminate your own team, and you're going to they'll have because I can almost guarantee it. If you tell the team what's going to what's happened there, they're very likely to have the same thing happen or experience mm-hmm. something similar because even unconsciously, they are likely to have it. It's going to come to the forefront. When they're doing the investigation. So you're better off not telling them anything. And, you know, if you have your case manager or your historian do research, then particularly if you employ psychics and mediums in your particular group, it will help in terms of that one person may know and kind of keep in mind that if the mediums come up to you and start saying, I see this or I see that, it may actually, you know, relate to what's happened there. That's happened to us on a number of occasions where I've done some research or I'm party to some information, and the mediums have corroborated it to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I think that any of our mediums would contaminate themselves because we're very fortunate with the folks that we have. But, you know, even in the best situations, you still, as a serious researcher, can't rule out the fact that somebody may have contaminated themselves and had done a little research. So it's something you've got to be very cautious about.
And, you know, another thing that you just touched on is psychics and mediums. If you've got those on the team or if you're inviting those to the team, really check them out. Now, what you're looking for, should be looking for, very grounded people. There's a lot of folks out there who are not grounded, who claim psychic abilities and see all sorts of things everywhere. But I will tell you from experience that one of the traits that I have noted among the very serious and capable psychics and mediums that we have on the team and that I've met, they are all very grounded, and they are all very ethical. In other words, they don't just blurt out everything that they pick up on. They weigh it. They think about it. They try to validate it. And then they might say something, you know, that's relevant to the case. They don't just blurt it out. So anyway, it's been a good discussion. I think I've pretty much made a lot of the points that I wanted to make. How about you, Grant?
Yeah, you know, once again, everybody's contribution tonight in chat was really great, mm-hmm. and we really appreciate your feedback, and it's good to see that we're on the same page with a lot of folks. Not that we would disagree with anybody if they necessarily weren't, so it's really refreshing to see folks, because occasionally we'll have folks come into the chat room who vehemently disagree with our particular approach. So everybody, mm-hmm. you know, great responses tonight. We really appreciate them.
Yeah, and Diane just typed something in there. Do you interview the witnesses separately? Absolutely. You can insert your own word there. Yes. Yes. Always interview the witnesses separately. If two researchers witness something, it needs to be part of your standards and protocols that they don't discuss it between themselves. Now, they're going to probably very naturally say, did you see that? Oh, yeah, I did. That's it. Now, they need to go and jot down their experience in front of, with somebody else, with somebody who wasn't even there, each somebody separately, and talk about it. Same thing with clients. We don't interview clients as a group. We interview them separately as well. So Good point. There's a lot of good points like that.
Well, you know, what you just said, Doug, was so important because we just recently experienced a situation where a sister group on one of their – they were early into – you know, they hadn't done very many investigations, and they went on an investigation, and all of a sudden three people claimed to have seen an apparition. Now, any of you folks that have been doing this for a while like we have, that's like the Holy Grail. I mean, you don't see apparitions. And they did exactly what they shouldn't have done. They just kind of compared notes right then and there. They didn't follow the protocol. Now, everybody can understand, and I think that this wasn't done. I think it was done purely out of excitement, and that, you know, there was no malice there. You know, they excitement and sheer inexperience, because it's absolutely critical if somebody sees something or perceives something that of that nature that might have occurred, that you shut up, you follow protocol, which is just as Doug explained, you write it down, and then you compare notes. Because I think it can almost be a hysterical thing where if you say, did you see that ghost? Oh, it just touched me. And then all of a sudden, it's kind of like group hysteria or group hypnosis to some degree. So it's really critical that you follow protocol too.
Yes, absolutely. So, great discussion, folks. I really enjoyed this discussion tonight. It was an opportunity for Grant and I to discuss some things that have come up recently that just been on our mind. And typically, every week we've got a guest, and we don't really get an opportunity to expound on some of this. So, if you've got ideas for the show, if you'd like to see a certain guest on, or if you'd like to see a certain topic addressed on the show, we'd love to hear from you. We're trying to make this show a good show, one that's of value, one that can help you as a paranormal researcher or an enthusiast. We want to stimulate your thinking. We want to get you thinking outside the box, and we want to be stimulated by your thinking too. We like those fresh ideas. So don't hold back, and if you'd be so kind as to rate our show highly, we'd appreciate that. As far as coming up guests, let me give you a quick rundown. You know, Grant, we've only got like two open dates through the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Next week we've got psychic Robbie Thomas on the show with us. That's on November 13th. November 20th, Anomalous Phenomena with Ed Kraft. Now, if you know anything about Ed, you know that he's very eclectic in his interests in the paranormal, kind of like us. Not just one thing, but he's into a number of things. The week after that, November 27th, is Thanksgiving, and we're not going to do a show that night. Then after that, we've got The Alien Hunter with Daryl Sims. Now, I'm really looking forward to that show, and, you know, I've complained about the term ghost hunter for a long time. Alien hunter, or maybe gray alien hunter, you know, I don't so much have a problem with that.
Yeah, you know, Daryl's done a lot of research, and we're really looking forward. That's going to, and by the way, folks, that's going to be a two-hour slot. You know, we know that, you know, we've done some one-hour shows, but when we want to, you know, assure you guys out there that when we have a guest that we think is going to, you know, stimulate you, or, you know, be very entertaining with, or be able to impart a great deal of information to you, that we will keep that two-hour slot open. And, you know, the other thing that Doug mentioned is we always welcome your feedback. We appreciate any feedback from you. And if you want to participate on the show, if you would like to be a guest, or you know somebody that you think would be a good guest, have them get in touch with us, and we welcome any topics that you might want us to discuss, as Doug alluded to earlier.
You know, and that's another point I was thinking today. You know, here we've got this show. We've had some pretty remarkable people on this show, Dr. Roll, Michael Cremo. We've had John Hutchison. We've had, I'm not even thinking of all of them. We've had Bill Nell. Who else have we had? We've had a number of really
Stan
great
Friedman,
guests.
Frank Fischino.
Here, Dr. Jacobs here.
Yep. Dr. Atwater was on the show and did near death.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's any of those folks that you would like to have us invite back, let us know, because we'll be happy to do that.
Yeah, but, you know, we also have a forum here, because this show is for paranormal researchers. You got a message? You've got something burning inside to get out? Well, you know, let us know. What do you want to talk about? What would you like to – what's your message? Do you have some new technique or new approach or new perspective that's should be shared? Well, you know, here we are. We've tried Linda Moulton Howe. I don't believe she's responded to our invitations, right, Grant?
No, she hasn't, but we never give up hope. Yeah, Linda, yeah. If you're out there, we love you, and, you know, we'd love to have you on the show.
So if you've got something, we'd love to hear from you. Anyway, we're not going to belabor it anymore. Tonight, we actually intended to do a one-hour show. We've kind of gone over that. Some shows will be 1 hour. Some will be two. It just depends on the content and what we've got to share. So anyway, folks, we really appreciate your time. Please take a look at Paranexus.org. We'd love to have you as a member. If you're not a member of Paranexus, contribute to that. Help us to grow it as an association of serious and professional paranormal researchers, regardless of your field. You can be in parapsychology, hauntings, ufology, cryptozoology. It doesn't matter. We would love to have you. So take a look at that. If you have any questions, you can certainly email us. Our emails are in the contact us part of the website. And if you're looking to do some education, if you want to learn some different things, take a look at ParanexusAcademy.org. Right now we've got the CFPI class going. You can still register for that. The Certified Paranormal Investigator class, that's a leadership course for founders and directors. We've got the CPI class. I've got a class starting here this month on hypnosis, using hypnosis and paranormal research that I'm teaching. If you would like to teach a class, we're looking for good instructors, somebody who can teach a topic that's of importance to the paranormal field and personal growth, because personal growth does relate to it. So we'd love to hear from you on that. You can even make a few bucks on the side. So anyway, with that having been said, Grant, it's been an enjoyable hour or so with you.
Absolutely. And one thing I'd like to add, Doug, is earlier in our conversations about Cyprus, if any of you folks have any feedback about Cyprus, we would certainly welcome your feedback on that in particular. So, yeah, everybody have a great weekend. It's always wonderful to share this hour or 2 hours with you every week. Everybody stay safe and stay happy.
Yeah, and join us next week for Psychic Robbie Thomas. And beyond that, have a great weekend. Take care, folks. Thanks so much for your time.
Good night.
Universe.